You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Maria McKinley.
And I'm Joe Crawford. This is the Daily Local News for Monday, March 20th, 2017.
We're still funded at 2004 levels, and the number of seniors, it's almost doubled in the last 10 years.
Carrie Conway of the Area 10 Agency on Aging discusses how the Trump administration's budget could negatively impact local seniors. That's in today's WFHB Community Report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, we hear from a student activist working on subjects ranging from climate change to immigration. That's on Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community. But first, these local headlines.
The city of Bloomington is holding meetings all week about the proposed annexation of nearly 10,000 acres of county property. Mayor John Hamilton has proposed incorporating the areas into the city. The city government would be responsible for providing services to those areas, including trash pickup and police. Some affected property owners have voiced concerns about increased taxes and other effects of the proposed annexation. A meeting tonight begins at 6 p.m. Meetings are also scheduled for tomorrow at 6 p.m., Wednesday at 11 a.m., Thursday at 11 a.m., Friday at 6 p.m., and Saturday at 11 a.m. All the meetings are scheduled to last for 2 hours. They'll be held at City Hall.
The Lotus Education and Arts Foundation has announced 5 performances by global artists for the 22nd annual Lotus Blossoms program. Lotus Blossoms is an educational outreach program that seeks to create opportunities to experience, celebrate, and explore the diversity of the world's cultures through music and the arts. Starting Wednesday and continuing through April 18th, artists from China, Iraq, Uganda, Mexico, and the U.S. will perform for students at schools in 6 Indiana counties: Monroe, Lawrence, Greene, Owen, Brown, and Marion. All concerts are free and open to the public. Complete public and event information is available at lotusfest.org/events.
State lawmakers in Indiana are considering a bill that would help victims of domestic violence obtain separate phone accounts from their abusers. Current law provides no legal mechanism for victims to change their wireless phone accounts if their abuser is the primary account holder. That means abusers can often track the phone records of victims. Senate Bill 323's author, Senator Aaron Houchin, told the News and Tribune newspaper in Jeffersonville that the bill will, quote, allow a victim to keep their vital information and stay connected to their network, their family and friends, and most importantly, have the ability to find shelter, support, and guidance, unquote. The House Committee on Judiciary approved the bill last week. It goes now to the full House for a vote. If passed, it would need the governor's signature to become law.
The Indiana Department of Correction has discontinued its contract with Corizon Health, the private corporation that handles most of the state's inmate health care. Corizon announced last week it would be laying off about 700 employees in 22 locations around the state. The contract, which is worth $100 million a year, is being taken up by Pittsburgh-based Wexford Health Services. A representative from Corizon said in a letter to the state, Wexford may end up hiring many of Corizon's former employees, though there's no guarantee that will happen. The loss of the corrections contract is the most recent in a string of contract losses for Corizon. In the last 2 years, the for-profit company has lost their contracts with at least 5 other states. They also lost an especially lucrative contract managing health care for Rikers Island in New York City. The losses were driven by a wave of complaints, lawsuits, and wrongful death settlements. Corizon has faced dozens of lawsuits in Indiana alone, alleging poor health care and at least one wrongful death. The firm paid $4.5 million to settle lawsuits in New Mexico resulting from two inmate deaths and alleged sexual assault by a company doctor. Corizon also paid $8.3 million to the family of a California inmate who died of severe alcohol withdrawal after being denied treatment. An investigation by the South Bend Tribune last year revealed hundreds of inmate complaints and dozens of lawsuits against Corizon in Indiana. One severely disabled patient died after just 37 days in a state prison under the care of Corizon employees. Another died in an ambulance during a two-hour drive to a hospital, despite a much closer hospital being available. Wexford Health Source's record isn't spotless either. Wexford paid out $3.1 million to settle 5 years of complaints in Illinois, including delayed treatment and low-quality care.
This week is Severe Weather Preparedness Week in Indiana. Monroe County's Emergency Management Director, Allison Moore, notified the county commissioners last week that longer than usual siren drills will be conducted. They'll be conducted tomorrow. The siren will sound for 5 minutes in the morning between 10 a.m. and 10:30 a.m. and in the evening between 7 and 7:30 p.m. Commissioners declared the same week as National Safe Place Week in Monroe County. Commissioner Julie Thomas read that declaration.
Whereas National Safe Place Week will be celebrated across the nation during the week of March 19th through 25th, 2017, and whereas the youth of Monroe County, Indiana will determine the future strength of our county and be the bearers of our democracy, and whereas youth need a safe haven from various negative influences, such as child abuse, substance abuse, and crime, and they need to have resources readily available to assist them when faced with circumstances that compromise their safety. And whereas the Safe Place program offers short-term safe places at neighborhood locations where trained volunteers are available to counsel and advise youth seeking assistance and guidance. And whereas a safe place is often the first step a child can take to obtain immediate help and safety. Businesses, including fast food restaurants, convenience stores, movie theaters, and community buildings such as fire stations, libraries, and community centers are designated as locations where youth can get help.
Thomas said the Youth Services Bureau partners with more than 90 businesses and schools to operate its Safe Place program. Commissioners went on to ratify a $160,000 runaway homeless youth grant. Youth Services Bureau Director Vicki Thievenow said the grant is in its third and final year.
This is the grant that pays for the Safe Place program.
Yes.
I'd also like to be sure that you know that our program won the Indiana Safe Place Program of the Year this year from the Indiana Youth Services Association. So we were very proud of the work that Vanessa did and set a high standard for Bridget to meet.
Excellent.
But we're excited about that and wanted you to know.
Also at the meeting, County Health Administrator Penny Cottle received approval from commissioners to partner with the National Association of County and City Health Officials on health screenings. Through the partnership, the county is receiving $6,000 for education and screening conducted through the Head Start program.
We have received funds from NACHO for several years to build our Medical Reserve Corps capacity. And over the years, they change them from year to year, but we're excited about this particular one in that it's letting us partner to do some lead education and screening of children. So we will be working with the South Central Community Action Program and Head Start to provide education to parents and staff and be at some health fairs to educate community about lead. And children are supposed to be checked for lead early on. That isn't always happening, and so we want to ensure that they are getting screened so that if there is an issue, we can do a lead assessment and we can abate those issues.
In other business, commissioners approved a $293,000 agreement with the IXOYE Trail and Greenways Engineering Company to begin work on the Bicentennial Pathway Project. Public Works Director Lisa Ridge spoke about that project.
This was formerly known as the Unionville Trail. This project will make bicycle improvements along Old State Road 37 North from Audubon Drive to Robinson Road.
The next meeting of the Board of County Commissioners will be held at 9 a.m. on March 31st. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Joe Crawford.
And I'm Maria McKinley. The Trump administration's budget blueprint released last week would axe grants that help fund a multitude of local programs serving the poor, the elderly, and the disabled. The cuts are part of a plan to add $54 billion to the nation's defense budget. On the chopping block, a $3 billion National Energy Assistance Program, known as LIHEAP, and $3 billion in Community Development Block Grants, known as CDBG. Also to be sacrificed are Community Services Block Grants, which fund $715 million of programs across the nation. Area 10 Agency on Aging and the South Central Community Action Program are just two area agencies whose clients could be hard hit. Reporter Sarah Vaughn spoke with Carrie Conway, the CEO of Area 10 Agency on Aging, and Doug Wilson, Director of Communications for the South Central Community Action Program. She talked to them about the impact the budget cuts would have on their clients. We begin with Carrie Conway of Area 10 Agency on Aging.
What really is important to talk about here is the impact that it's going to have on older Americans.
Absolutely.
And so the CDBG block grant, even though that is not a funding stream that Area 10 Agency on Aging has direct access to or is you know, funneled to us in any way, it certainly impacts the people that we serve. So the main impact in our region that CDBG has for older adults is that it's used for modification of homes to make them accessible for people who have disabilities. And that's huge. I mean, that is a big deal because the median income for an older woman in this region is just a little over $13,000 a year. But one of the assets that they generally have is that they own their home, and they don't have the income to really hire professionals to come in. And in this region, that's probably the single most impactful use of CDBG dollars. You can have your home modified with things like grab bars, water doorways, maybe building a ramp, and you can keep your home safe in terms of making certain that the roof's not leaking, that sort of thing. So the CDBG block grants in this region, and in fact in all of Indiana, are not used for the senior nutrition program, but they are used for this other, you know, very important piece of successful aging in your home. In addition to that, in the Bloomington area, they use CDBG funding to fund things like better sidewalks in terms of, you know, building those little ramps that make it so you don't have to step up and over a curb, that sort of thing. Those are critical for older adults or people with disabilities trying to move around town, you know, being able to get to, you know, your hairdressers, your doctor's appointment, that sort of thing. You know, even if you catch a bus, a lot of times it's a couple blocks away and you need to be able to navigate sidewalks and cross streets. And CDBG funding is a big piece of how that happens in this area. So in general, keeping our region mobility friendly for older adults and people with disabilities, CDBG fundings have a huge impact on them. There's a lot of other funding in this budget blueprint that is going to impact older Americans. Probably the biggest one is the CNCS, the National Service Corporation, is basically being zeroed out. And we have a very, very large RSVP program, which is Retired and Senior Volunteer Program. This serves over right about 470 older adults in Monroe and Owen County. And what this program does is we match them with volunteer opportunities, and they have such a huge impact in our nonprofit community. Just in the Bloomington area, provides the equivalent of 62 full-time employees for our area nonprofits. And that's everything from Hoosier Hills Food Bank to the Humane Society to the Opportunity House for Macomb. You know, they're on tap for food drives. They're on tap for all kinds of, you know, nonprofit opportunities. The VI PAWS that the Monroe County Humane Society does, that's a lot of those folks that do that are RSVP volunteers. And they're supported in this by the RSVP program. It has a huge economic impact on the community. And to lose that would be devastating.
So let me make sure I understand you correctly. That money goes to pay for the administration of that RSVP volunteer program. Seniors could still connect directly with their nonprofit of choice and volunteer.
They certainly could, but, you know, having said that, you know, I've worked for nonprofits my entire adult life. They don't really have the time or the staff to coordinate volunteers. So if they, you know, say have a project that needs to be done, they may not be able to reach out to the community in a way that's effective in terms of getting enough people to show up to do it. And so for those one-off opportunities where, hey, we've got a project, do you have volunteers? That's where our RSVP program comes in. It also houses a very, very important program called Caring Companions. And this is one that has such a wonderful and direct impact on the well-being of older adults. It's very, very easy for older adults, especially living in rural areas, to become very, very isolated. So basically what the Caring Companions program does is that it matches up, and again, this is kind of e-harmony. We look for interests in common and, you know, that sort of thing to make certain that it's a good match, and we nurture that match by going along on those visits for a while to make certain that people are, you know, are hitting it off okay and that it's a good match. And basically, we're matching people so that they have a companion, someone who checks in with them two or three times a week, someone who might run some errands, go to the grocery store, maybe do a little light housekeeping, you know, vacuuming, that sort of thing. You know, keep an eye on their companion animal, because a lot of times that is the main person, main living creature that they talk to on a daily basis. So that if they need vet care or if they need better food or assistance, that they can help with that. It's really a wonderful program, and we have 88 pairs right now that we're actively managing, and that program would go away. That program is not only for older adults. RSVP serves people that are 50 plus. We have an awful lot of IU students and Ivy Tech students, you know, who match up with these older adults as well. A lot of our IU students stay with their companion the whole 4 years they're at IU. And you know, these are wonderful intergenerational relationships that everybody benefits from. This is a program that we developed. It's been going for 6 years now. It won a national award for its efficacy. And it's funded through the RSVP program.
And how much does that program cost to run?
It's one part-time person.
And there's no other source for funding that position?
No. Everything else that we have in terms of funding, and we are funded by a lot of different mechanisms, because our main funding stream, Older Americans Act, is sequestered still. Remember the sequester from 2013? We're still funded at 2004 levels. And you know demographically what's happening in this country. I mean, the number of seniors in our region, it's almost doubled in the last 10 years. And it's going up, you know, even more quickly now.
How does that compare to the national rate of aging?
It's right in line with it. Other programs that are under the acts that we don't directly administer but are very important to our clients, LIHEAP, the Low Income Heating and Energy Assistance Programs, LIHEAP and weatherization.
I spoke with Doug Wilson, Director of Communications at the South Central Community Action Program, about the weatherization program for low-income households and also the heating and cooling program that assists low-income residents with summer and winter fuel bills. The South Central Community Action Program administers these two programs through Community Services Block Grants, or CSBG. Wilson is still assessing the impact of the Trump budget and wasn't able to speak in detail before our deadline, but he did say that during the 2015-2016 program year, the heating and cooling program provided energy assistance to more than 3,000 households in four counties: Monroe, Morgan, Owen, and Brown. Within those households, 1,700 individuals were over 55, and of those, more than 600 were over the age of 70. Other programs at the South Central Community Action Program are also in jeopardy. One is the Thriving Connections Program, an anti-poverty initiative that, among other things, provides support to grandparents raising their grandchildren. Reporting for WFHB, I'm Sarah Vaughn.
That was WFHB reporter Sarah Vaughn. She spoke with Carrie Conway, CEO of Area 10 Agency on Aging, and Doug Wilson, Director of Communications for the South Central Community Action Program. She talked to them about possible impacts the Trump budget cuts could have on our area seniors, the poor, and the disabled.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Support also comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service, now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
Now it's time for Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community.
Welcome to Activate, featuring tales of inspiration from local citizens who stand up for what they believe in and encouraging you to find your cause, live your passion, make a difference. Volunteer.
Hi, my name is Stanley Jaguna. I'm a sophomore at Indiana University. I'm majoring in law and public policy, and I'm involved with Students Against State Violence and Students for a Democratic Society. With Students Against State Violence, our primary political campaign right now is to get IU to declare that they are a sanctuary campus. And what that means is that the administration will declare that campus police will not collaborate with agents from the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency, and they will also not share any data on undocumented students or faculty with the organization. And the other main outlet right now that is pretty active for me is with climate change and green energy. So right now I'm one of the key members on the Climate Leaders Coalition, which was a sort of spontaneous gathering of presidents of key organizations like IUSA and College Dems and GPSG. And what we are trying to do is look for a way to get IU to become more sustainable or commit to much greater sustainability measures for the future. The way that we're targeting that is through getting McRobbie to sign the climate leadership commitments for American colleges and university presidents. He has declined to sign the climate commitment in the past. So right now we are trying to devise ways to ramp up pressure, because if the administration absolutely will not budge on the climate leadership commitments, we also have put together our own sustainability measures, which would be to set up sort of a situation in negotiations where if he doesn't like the climate commitments, he's jumping from, a boiling pot to a frying pan. So what inspires me is I think it's important for us as college students especially to engage directly with the issues that we learn about in the classroom. I don't think that we are supposed to go to class and learn about the world, right, or certain issues in the world as if we are outside of the storm. We're within the storm, right? So I think that it's incredibly empowering to do so. I've had the high fortune of knowing a lot of people who are also doing the same thing, making incredible strides on their campuses, or they might not even be college students, but they believe that they have political agency and that the decisions that people make matters and we're all connected, right? The human experience is all connected. And feelings of pessimism, of powerlessness, definitely understandable at this point. But if everyone who felt that way did get activated, let's say for a year, just really, really got committed and did a lot of rigorous work, it'd be amazing what we could accomplish. Too easily, people give in to feeling like our issues are too distant from our individual lives and personal experiences on a day-to-day basis, or that these institutions don't heed to the voice of the people, which in extent is very true. But we can either try really hard, take losses as they come, pick up a few wins as well, be frustrated, but know, feel validated by the fact that there's a voice there, there's activity, there's some force trying to move the needle, or we can do nothing and just take the negative onslaughts as they come and watch structural deterioration happen. If there are any students listening to this, I would say that it's highly important that you get involved with the organizations that you see being visible on campus. And it's important that we treat these political action groups as serious tools to change the reality that we live in, because that's what they are. It seems as though Students Against State Violence is the leading political action organization on campus. We would benefit greatly from getting students activated. I've spoken a few times on the lack of diversity in a lot of activist left spaces. So we're specifically talking to students of color, black students. We want your voices in what we're doing because they're important and they're essential to, dare I say, the revolution. My name is Stanley Jiguna. I'm a student activist at IU. I'm involved with Students for a Democratic Society, the Climate Leaders Coalition, and Students Against State Violence. Let's all get together and be amateur world changers.
You've been listening to Activate, a co-production of WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, working together to build an empowered, vibrant, and engaged community. You may visit bloomington.in.gov/volunteer to find and sign up for local volunteer opportunities. All episodes of Activate are available online at wfhb.org/news/activate. For Bloomington Community Radio, I'm Jennifer Brooks.
This has been the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Jared Dill, Kathy Norton, and Joe Crawford, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, our partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Sarah Vaughn.
Activate is produced by Jennifer Brooks, along with the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network. Our engineer is Sarah Hetrick. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. For WFHB, I'm Joe Crawford.
And I'm Maria McKinley. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all other WFHB news programming, online at wfhb.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@wfhb.org.
If you use iTunes, you can have this show delivered directly to you. Just go to the iTunes store, search for WFHB Daily Local News, and subscribe to our podcast.
Stay tuned for Kiteline, a program amplifying the voices of those within Indiana's prison system, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.